Give me the best agents for this mission.
Personnel selected.
You ready to deal?
Venom.
What a sight of suckers!
When I say free, I mean free!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Full Force News Burst, brought to you by GeneralJoes.com, with me as your host, Chris Bloody Hawks McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80. Joining me today to discuss the F. Gary Gray mask movie news is Paddy, Lennon Precorn 3, the Lennon Precorning Lennon, and Justin Gimp Mask Crusader Bell. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this news burst. So, news broke yesterday that Paramount have apparently struck a deal with F. Gary Gray, famous for helming films like Friday, Set It Off, The Italian Job, Straight Outta Compton, and The Fate of the Furious, for a director position on a Hasbro mask movie. According to reports, the film would be produced by Hasbro and Gray and is currently in search of a writer to hatch a contemporary subculture movie with a youth empowerment angle. I was doing air quotes. The report went on to say that Gray gravitated towards Mask, we're starting with the air quotes again, because it is a vintage property that could be revamped and have something to say to a contemporary audience. End quote. Are Hasbro still trying to build a cinematic universe? Since we heard that a few of these properties have been dropped recently, including Mask, it's interesting to be getting these reports coming through. But what do we think about it? Let's start with Paddy O. McLennan Precorn. Paddy, I mean, what do you think with having Gary Gray, F. Gary Gray, as the director? What were your initial thoughts?
Well, first of all, just for his work on doing the video for Miss Jackson by Outkast alone.
Nice.
He is a hero.
That is not only is that an awesome video, but it is an absolute tune as well.
Yeah. So, you know, it's in good hands, considering John Chu had done a lot of worse videos before he got G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
I also think he directed Waterfalls by TLC as well.
Oh, God, he's an absolute star. I remember the name coming up on VH1 or MTV whenever they... They always have the listings, don't they? Yeah.
At the bottom of the videos, yeah.
I always thought that name always rung a bell. But yeah, it's from watching MTV and VH1 my entire life. He's been involved in a lot of hip-hop vids, hasn't he?
So that's two tunes that he's done.
Amazing.
So, you know, for at least and actually a couple of his movies aren't too bad. Negotiator is actually a pretty decent movie if you've never seen it. That's very enjoyable and it's well shot.
Yeah.
I haven't seen his Fast and Furious movie. I've only seen two of those, numbers 5 and 6, for any of you that are keeping track.
who's got the Paddy Fast and Furious spreadsheet going? That's what I want to know. What listener or viewer has a Paddy O'Lennon? I want to see that spreadsheet now. Go for it.
So the Negotiator and is probably the only one of his movies I'm familiar with. But actually, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Just looking at the list of stuff he's done, he hasn't done anything that's been like amazing, except possibly Straight Outta Compton.
Mm.
But, you know, he seems to be a fairly decent, safe pair of hands. You know, he's been making movies for 20 years at least and made some really great videos. So he seems to be a decent... You know, like I said, safe pair of hands.
Yeah. And Justin, what do you make of those quotes? You know, the contemporary subculture movie or the youth empowerment angle. How do you see that going?
Yeah, it makes me a little nervous. I mean, anybody who's it sounds like he doesn't want to make a Mask movie. He wants to make a youth empowerment movie that also features characters from Mask, which I think is not always the best approach. I mean, it's not like Mask has got a vast, huge audience of fans out there clamoring for, you know, 100% 80s aesthetic.
I think all three of them have been on this podcast.
Yeah, it was like me, Troy, and
Chris,
Paddy.
Troy, and not even me.
Not even you, yeah.
I was too poor.
Brian. Brian was probably...
Brian wasn't even a big fan either. So, you know, I think, you know, two of the three Mask fans are members of this podcast team.
I mean, that always kind of concerns me because it's obvious from these quotes, you know, and he pretty much comes out and say it. He's a attracted to the property because it's a vintage property that can be retold for a more contemporary audience. He's looking for something that's flexible and malleable and can be, morphed into something that will relate to people in the 21st century, which, isn't necessarily a bad thing. But wonder how much devotion it'll have to the vintage kind of.
The good thing about Mask is it is practically a blank slate. There hasn't been any media worth talking about in 30 years. There hasn't been any toys in 30 years. You could pretty much do whatever you wanted with it at this stage.
Do you think they'd follow like the IDW kind of path with how the comics kind of went? Or I'm not saying that that's a good or a bad thing. I'm asking you, do you think they would go that route or use that as
not even IDW wants to follow the IDW pattern Mask anymore.
Well, part of my concern with this whole thing, I mean, we heard the rumors way back when where it was possible that Mask was going to focus around this group of five teenagers who find magic elements or
Power Rangers, Vision? Effectively, wasn't
magic
it?
Technology. It was a Power Rangers reboot.
Yeah, and you're talking about youth empowerment. I mean, that kind of sounds like still what they're talking about. So it seems like that may be the direction they're still leaning in, which is kind of. Again, doesn't make me especially comfortable. I think you can make Mask relevant to a modern audience without, completely, tearing down what it was and making it into something else. I mean, I don't mind changing some things. Like Patty said, it's a blank slate. It's not like you're devoted to any particular story or whatever. But at some point, the core of the property, you would hope, is kind of still there, or else it's not really a Mask movie. It's just a modern movie that has some of the names from the Mask history in it. And it's if they change like these technological marvels of converting vehicles into these weird magic elements, is that really Mask or is that something else?
Yeah, and I think you wouldn't, I mean, you'd kind of lose that audience you already have, but I don't think many people, right. I don't think they're that worried about that particular audience currently. True. I think that would be something They'd probably tap into that, like, if there was a big success around, say, this film, it had nothing really to do with the original Mask as a story, as a concept and so on. I think you could probably cater to the classic audience with some sort of classic rebranding, Mega Bloks or something along those lines, where they would just bring out toy lines and stuff that had a classic kind of feel to them. But I don't know, it doesn't seem to be that. Even with a really successful movie nowadays, it doesn't seem to be like it, I mean, the toy line doesn't necessarily seem to be that strong, does it? I mean, we've seen it with a lot of even like Black Panther, massive movie, one record breaking. Have the toys really done that well? I still see Black Panther peg warming in Target and Walmart. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, that's a slightly different subject, but what do you think about, like a toy line for Mask coming off the back of this? Do you think, how would they do it? What direction do you think they would go?
Well, especially with the retail climate it is today, I mean, there aren't many retail stores carrying vehicles at all, and Mask was built around vehicles. So I really don't know how they would translate any kind of, successful film franchise to a toy line, considering how important vehicles are to Mask's history. At this point, with whatever story they're talking about, who knows if they're going to even include vehicles? Maybe they'll just include the masks or something. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a weird middle ground that you just don't know what direction to take.
I wonder if they would use the masks at all in a movie.
Oh, you think it'll be all vehicles?
Having your cast wearing masks all the time is something that not even Marvel does it anymore. I mean, if you think about how much time in a Marvel movie are the main characters actually wearing masks in it?
Yep. Yeah, you see Tony Stark like constantly, don't you? Whenever he's in it, you see the interior shot of his face, don't you?
Yeah. So I don't know how they would translate the mask. You can't cast famous actors and then have their faces not be visible for an hour and a half or 2 hour movie.
Well, I mean, I suppose it would be the same thing that Marvel do, though, wouldn't it? You'd have a lot of elements where they're not in, like, action mode, they just wouldn't have them on. I suppose that would be the way to do it.
But something that's built so strongly around vehicles and masks, and both of those things you can't really do that well on film.
I know. I mean, the movie is called Mask, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
A movie called Mask without the masks. I mean, what is,
like, I'm just thinking, you know, watching the Infinity War trailers or whatever recently, you're like, nobody's wearing a mask. Captain America's got a beard. That's all he's got covering his face.
You could say that's a mask. that would be my character in the Mask movie. It would just be the beard, and it would be like, yeah, like Boris Bushkin. Well, okay. So, I mean, do you guys think this is actually going to happen? Because do you think, say, the G.I. Joe movie's coming up? Oh, I say that very tentatively. The Micronauts is the same kind of situation. We just heard Zach Penn signed up to write ROM, which is not, again, doesn't mean it's coming out, but, you know, there's kind of progression going on with these kind of lines now. We heard a while back that ROM and Mask just weren't even going to happen, like, you know, flat out said, well, we're not doing anything with them, they've kind of been dropped a little bit. And then everyone was kind of like, well, that, you know, we'll throw them out. And then all of a sudden both of these movies come up as potential follow-ons from this G.I. Joe and Micronauts, which they've got, like, etched in stone. That they've, I don't know what they've etched with, maybe like a pencil. But I mean, do you even expect that any of these movies are going to happen, or do you think that it all really hinges on one of them that they start with being super successful?
I guess I'll believe it when I actually start seeing trailers and stuff like that for it. I think you're right. I mean, it really depends on, you know, whether the entire franchise happens depends on how successful the first film is, for sure. But whether or not that first film even happens, I think, is still somewhat up in the air, just because they haven't had a concrete plan. It's gone back and forth. And even when we kind of knew another movie was coming, I mean, right after Retaliation aired, you know, Paramount had this huge announcement where, oh, great news, there's a G.I. Joe 3 in the works. You know, it was supposed to release in 2019. And then, you know, how many times have things changed then? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't believe anything until we start seeing some trailers and some real visual evidence that stuff is actually being worked on.
Yeah, until we get the news of 3D reshoots, right?
Yeah, exactly. Until they announce the 15-month delay, I don't believe that.
I won't believe it's happening until I'm actually in a cinema seeing it.
Until it's finished. Until it's finished, and you've come out of the cinema.
We all thought Retaliation was going to be released at one point, and then suddenly 2 weeks before it was due to come out, they're like, "We're going to wait 9 months. See you next year."
Oh god, that was awful, wasn't it? The toy line getting screwed up from it, and that was just the worst.
It's funny that they've. It's not usual that they would attach a director before the script is written. That's not something that usually happens, and they generally like to have at least a decent draft done so they can shop it around directors. So the fact that they've gone director first with G.I. Joe and these, whatever his name is, Catrona or whatever his name is.
It's Catrona, isn't it? Yeah.
It's
Caruso.
Right?
Caruso, thank you. We're talking of Flint Caruso, then, aren't we? That was Flint from Retaliation.
No, DJ Catrona was Retaliation.
DJ's mixed up. Is it DJ from Battle Force 2000?
So the fact that they've approached directors first before there's a script written is a little bit strange from what I know of Hollywood and, you know, following, you know, movies for most of my adult life. That generally means that they want the director to put their stamp on things. So the director will generally hire someone that they would usually have as their go-to script writer.
Yeah.
DJ Caruso has earned his directing chops in Hollywood to be able to call all the shots in the new G.I. Joe movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely got the track record there. You know, I mean, you could probably look at past movies from those people to give you an idea of the tone of what the future movie is going to be.
I know.
Because they'll probably go to a script writer that they're familiar with.
Yeah.
Or their partners with.
I know. Like, it's very rare. It's very rare that you get, you know, when the director's attached to something, that what you get at the end is something that you haven't seen that director do before. Very, very rare that is the case. There's always some sort of kind of connective tissue between, you know, a director's films. So that is, I mean, that is a concern for me when you think like Triple X, whatever.
Like, there's nothing in F. Gray Gray's back catalogue that would say that a kid-friendly movie is something he would be comfortable doing.
Yeah.
His stuff is all kind of aimed at an older audience. He's not a director for making movies aimed at probably who they should be aimed at.
I would say that with F. Gary Gray, he's got more of a different kind of palette across the board when you look at those films. There's all sorts of different styles in there. But at the same... Well, this, I mean, no, it still I mean, is. If you, looking, if you look at like
looking at them, most of them are kind of adult-aimed action movies.
Yeah, no, fair
Negotiator,
enough.
Negotiator, The Italian Job, Fate of the Furious.
But like, I mean, as in like Fate of the Furious and The Italian Job and Set It Off and Friday and Straight Outta Compton, they're not directly relatably the same, are they? Like, and
no.
There's like a, I feel like you go to someone else, another director, and it's always much action movie, action movie, action. You know, a Bay movie, for God's sake. Because it's exactly the f-ing same. It just has different people in it sometimes. But I kind of think that, and again, there's a lot of other experience in there that, and you never know, he might try something different. But again, usually the case is that you're going to get something very similar. So I would fully expect, and this is just me personally, a kind of Fast and the Furious, but even younger. That's what I'm expecting here.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. No. Of the 8 Fast and the Furious movies at this stage, 2 of them are genuinely very good.
And it's a hugely successful franchise. So what does that mean?
Neither of them are the 2 that he directed, but the Fate of the Furious is supposed to be fine. You know, it made a lot of money, but nobody...
That's the key,
it's one of those
though.
Movies that I think has been forgotten. A year later, nobody even remembers what happened in it.
That's the key, though, isn't it? It's the money that's made. And if it's a successful film, that means we get all the other stuff that we're actually want, you know, that we could actually get something out of. And that's kind of what you want to hope for.
A good and successful G.I. Joe and a good and successful mass movie are stuff we all want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
So, and also just one more thing I just want to throw out there quickly. Are we still in a combined universe mentality here? Are they separating these and doing them all differently? Or do you think Hasbro still wants to keep that as a universe? Not necessarily cross them over every 5 minutes, but have them operate in the same fictional cinematic universe.
Yeah, it's odd. I don't get that impression because they keep on announcing them as individuals. But I mean, to, you know, looking at, say, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they kind of do the same thing where there are, you know, or they did at the beginning.
They did,
anyway,
yes, yeah.
They weren't real overt about how they connected. But I mean, really, there's no, you know, pretty much any conversation or reference to the Hasbro Cinematic Universe has not been mentioned in months. So I would hazard a guess that we're probably past that, or they may be dialing it back a little bit. And they may try to tie things together here and there, but I don't think it's going to be quite as aggressive as they originally did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of this segment. So F. Gary Gray to helm the Mask film. I mean, what does that mean? None of us really know yet, but we'll believe it when we see it. Moving on. What would we like to see in a modern Mask movie, guys? So with this news fresh off the block, what do we want to see done with this property? How would we cast it? What would the story look like? I mean, what's the best approach here? Do you think sticking very close to the original source material is the way to go, or do you think they need, as Paddy mentioned before, you've got a blank slate, let's, you know, maybe do something a bit different with it? Let me get your thoughts on this, Paddy. Let's start with casting for you. Who would you kind of cast in this movie?
Let's not, because I've actually written out a 4-page pitch
oh, brilliant,
for a Mask movie, including characters, actors, and the crossover potential. So maybe go to Justin first, so I don't talk for the next half an hour.
Justin, casting.
Well, it's time. I mean, Patty brought up a great point where, like, I mean, the masks are such a core piece of the film that it's tough to really say, well, this person is, you know, this character, because, you know, if they're wearing a mask for a portion of the movie, which they probably won't be.
Yeah.
But honestly, you know, also as Patty referenced, it's such a blank slate. I don't really have a strong opinion of any particular actor who would be perfect for any particular role. I think they're all relatively interchangeable.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good, very good point, actually. Any old f***er.
And looking at, you know, F. Gary Gray's kind of history, it, you know, it seems to lend itself towards some kind of, you know, fast-paced vehicular kind of film. You know, you've got The Italian Job, which had a lot of kind of those choreographed chase scenes and things like that. And you have Furious, which is a, you know, similar kind of format for some of their car chases and things. So, you know, I guess I kind of see it focusing on that type of thing. But, I mean, the masks have to play a role somewhere. But as far as casting goes, like I said, I don't really have... There's nobody I'm married to, because I don't see anybody on, in a movie or a TV screen immediately say, oh, that's definitely a Matt Tracker. You know, it's some generic dude with blonde hair. you know, whatever. No personality really jumps out at me as being, you know, somebody who has to represent that character. Mask is one of those films kind of similar to Transformers, where the most interesting aspects of the movie are kind of the mechanics.
Yeah,
you know,
Transformers.
Yes, Optimus Prime is a character, but it's almost the draw for you know, multi-million-dollar film franchise. The draw is kind of how they transform and what they do on screen, not necessarily what kind of character they are.
Yeah.
And that might hold same true, you know, same might hold true for Mask, where you're much more interested in how they make Thunderhawk, you know, turn from a car to an airplane, rather than, you know, who is playing Matt Tracker.
That could be quite effective, couldn't it? The kind of transformations. I mean, if you go back to, say, Transformers 1, I thought where they kind of, it was still a lot going on, but it was definitely more simplified than the following movies. And I think that if they did some really cool transformations like they did in that first Transformers movie, that would be so cool. Like, you know, Rhino just transforming, like locking down where it is and the huge cannon coming out the back of it, you know, like something like that would be so awesome.
I think if they approach Mask the right way, they could have a really potentially successful franchise, very similar to Transformers, because it's not stuff that you've really seen on screen before. If they can really take those vehicular transformations and really ramp them up and make them cool, you know, that's not something you see every day, so that would really draw people in. But if they're going to change it to this, you know, random youth empowerment, you know, kids find magical elements that type of thing, it's just going to be Power Rangers 3 or whatever, and nobody's really going to care a whole lot.
I mean, I've got a horrible feeling we're going to see a lot of like tropes in this movie, like a lot of the kind of same old drawn out bullshit. And I don't want to kind of like kill it before it's out there, because you know, I have no idea yet. I'm just concerned that I'm going to see this boring origin story of somebody who, you know, it's got nothing to do with, say, like how the original Matt Tracker came, because we don't really know. It just, he's a billionaire and he just, you know, has this amazing it's like all over the place, but it, I mean, it's basically Bruce Wayne. But I mean, in, you know, to see like a, you know, a kid on the wrong side of the tracks having to, you know, like maybe kind of like not doing well at school and being a little bit rebellious and all that kind of shit. I'm a little bit tired of all that crap now. I don't even think kids really relate to that anymore. I don't think I really related to it when I was a kid, and I didn't think like, oh yeah, a really cool rebel. Oh yeah, and then
fight them power. Yeah, etc.
I'm just like, oh,
you just
want to
see the cool vehicle. You know,
And I've got a feeling we'd be getting a Sam Witwicky story, wouldn't we? We'd be getting that kind of overuse of the human characters. And Paddy, what about yourself, mate? How do you, I mean, take us through your idea.
Right, cracks knuckles. So, my Mask pitch. I like the idea from IDW that Mask are essentially a G.I. Joe sub-team.
Yeah.
I think that worked. That's one of the ideas from the IDW comic that actually worked well.
Yeah.
It made sense. So, I would like to keep that in a forthcoming movie, partly because I think it's a good idea, partly because I think it's a strong crossover idea.
That could be the Nick Fury moment, couldn't it? That could be the bit at the end when General Hawk turns up and he's like, look, putting together a team.
And also, I'm sorry to say this, but I just don't think Mask is a strong enough franchise to stand on its own two legs, at least not initially. So I'd have it tie in quite strongly to, presumably, you know, the 2019 G.I. Joe movie is a success, 2020. And then you can have this come out a year later in 2021. So for casting, the main cast I have
the
down
Rock.
Here...
The Rock.
And I'll give you suggested answers.
John Cena, The Rock.
So for
the
Mask
is just going to play every role.
Gloria Baker.
Including Gloria Baker.
Gloria Baker, that he'd be in a dress. I'll suggest who I have in my cast list here and suggested actors for them. So for the Mask team, I have Matt Tracker, and I've got nobody cast for him because I think you would probably need to go quite young with Matt Tracker. I think he probably shouldn't be much more
Macaulay
than 18.
Culkin.
Like old enough to drive, but like otherwise he should be a relative unknown. The other two members of the Mask team would be Gloria and Dusty. I haven't cast Dusty again because I think he should also be probably a younger actor, and I'm not really familiar with who that would be. For Gloria,
here we go.
I would personally cast Dominique Tipper, who is in The Expanse, if any of you guys are watching that.
Oh, yeah.
She plays Niobe.
Cool.
I think she's got the right kind of vibe for it to make a good
vibe.
Gloria. She's a really good actress. And that character of Naomi in The Expanse is not a million miles away from what I'd like to see with Gloria. Yeah, you know, she's smart. She can hold her own in the fight. And she doesn't take any shit. So I'd like to see someone like that for Gloria. For Venom, we would need to have Miles Mayhem, Vanessa, Sly Rax, and Cliff Dagger. Now, for actors for those, I would pick Frank Grillo for Miles. You may be familiar with him from Captain America: The Winter Soldier, where he plays Devereaux, the strike team leader. He fights Cap Elevator. He fights Falcon at the end.
Turns into crossbones.
Yeah, he turns into crossbones. Yeah, I think he would make a brilliant Miles Mayhem.
But he died. He died, Paddy, in the end of Civil War, so he can't do it, unfortunately.
Civil War. But he's the right age in that he would be 20 or so years older than Matt and Dusty, if you're casting them 18 to 20 years old. He's handy in a fight. He looks the part of a military guy, which Miles is supposed to be. And also, he can play a bad guy quite well.
Yeah.
So I think he's got the physicality there so that you could have him and Matt fight each other at the end and not make it look like 20-year-old Matt Tracker is beating up 60-year-old geriatric.
fat grey-haired, mustachioed loser.
Which is what happened in IDW. You're like, this is a young guy beating the out of a geriatric in the last issue. So I think Frank would be a great, make a great Miles. For Vanessa, I would suggest Natalie Dormer from Game of Thrones. And Hunger Games. I just think she would be very good at that kind of sly, manipulative kind of role.
Yeah.
And she's also a very good actress.
Black wig.
Put on a wig on her and you'll be fine. Dye her hair. Put my hair dye, I'll sort all the problems there. I would have Sly Rax and I would have Donald Glover
playing
Sly Rax.
Nice.
Play him as like a con man, trickster, sweet talker.
God, that is a brilliant idea. Brilliant idea.
Infiltrator guy, for a thing. And then Cliff Dagger for kind of the bruiser character. I'm going to suggest an English martial artist called Scott Adkins.
Cool.
He's in the Expendables movie. He is, I think it's the second one. That's the one with Jean-Claude Van Damme. He is Jean-Claude Van Damme's henchman in the second Expendables movie. He is he's a British martial artist. He does a lot of martial arts movies, and he is an absolute beast. If you want somebody who looks the part of a threatening henchman who would knock the head of anybody.
Maybe doesn't have that many lines as well, possibly.
You wouldn't need to. He's actually a decent actor, but, you know, he is the sort of person you would just point him at somebody and say, kill them.
Kill, yeah.
He will. I think he'd be great at that.
Okay, Miles, I'll do it. Yeah, that kind of thing.
And then for my pitch, I also have two G.I. Joe team members who would be extended cameos.
Nice.
And they would be Scarlet, who I leave it up to whoever wants to cast Scarlet, and Roadblock.
Of course.
Who I am casting as Terry Crews as Roadblock.
Oh, no way. That's amazing.
Because I think he's awesome. And I think he would be an amazing Roadblock.
So I suppose that would all hinge on who they cast in G.I. Joe in that first movie then, really, wouldn't it? But no, that's brilliant. Terry Crews would be a brilliant Roadblock, wouldn't he?
I think he'd be fantastic. He's a fantastic actor. He looks the part.
Mm.
And he just is, he's got like charisma to him. You know, through the way where you could watch him in anything, I think. He's amazing.
In some swim shorts, I could watch him in some...
he's amazing in Brooklyn Nine-Nine as Terry.
Yes, big time.
And he's all right in the Expendables too. And, you know, he can carry a big gun and make it look easy, which is what you need for Roadblock.
Did you have a story for this as well?
Yeah, I do. I have a four-page plot written out here. Hang on. So, again, we're keeping Mask as a G.I. Joe sub-team. Miles is a long-time Joe team member. They are basically Joe's covert ops unit, using disguised vehicles to infiltrate enemy facilities and steal plans, steal information, hack into systems, whatever, using the disguised vehicles as their cover.
Cool.
So the tone of the movie would be kind of like the Fast and the Furious, following on from the director is. So instead of it being a war movie or whatever, I would want it to be like a heist movie where set piece action pieces are heists. So the first
Oceans and the Furious then.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that's what the Fast and the Furious movies are heist movies.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. I mean, they use the cars to rob stuff.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing, Paddy. I'm vibing off this. Vibe.
So Scarlet and Roadblock recruit three MAST team members to this unit over Miles' objections. So Scarlet doesn't really trust Miles. She thinks there's something else going on in the background. She wants to bring in her people. She recruits those three younger people to join the MASK team. And, you know, they all have their own very, very different specialties. So you have Matt Tracker as the engineer and kind of mechanic. Glory is your information systems kind of person. And then Dusty's original MASK wild card has him as being like an acrobat. So I could see him being like a free runner if you needed someone to get into a,
nice,
into a tight space.
Because that worked really well with Flint, didn't it? On the yeah. I'd want to see that more. I'd want to see more of that actually implemented this time, if that was a, if that was the case.
Yeah. So they're taken onto the team over Miles' objections. Miles doesn't really want these kids hanging around. He doesn't trust them.
Get off my lawn, yeah.
He's got his own stuff going on in the background. So their first mission would be a raid on a Mars Industries facility. That's to tie it into G.I. Joe. They need to steal plans for a weapon that Mars Industries are building. They fail, because they're basically caught by Mars industry security. They escape basically by the skin of their teeth and don't accomplish the mission. The reason being is that Miles is taking payoffs behind it, and he's secretly working for the bad guys.
Nice.
He's been selling information. When he's been doing these missions for G.I. Joe, he's been, you know, stealing other things as well. He's been, you know, selling the information on the black market. And that's kind of why he doesn't want any new members on the team, because his guys are all in it. Vanessa, Slyrax, and Cliff Dagger, they're basically pooling money, taking money on the side. Because of the failure of the mission, he gets Matt, Gloria, and Dusty kicked off the team. You know, goes over Scarlet's head to get them kicked off the team, because he's pinned the failure of the mission on those three. They're forced out of G.I. Joe. Matt is p***ed off, obviously, so he convinces Gloria to hack into Miles' records. They find a bunch of secret communications he's got going on between him and various terrorist organizations, including Cobra. Matt's furious and decides, we need to get back at him. So we're going to break into the pit, steal our vehicles back, and use the vehicles to bring him to justice. They break into the pit, Matt and his guys. They get captured by Roadblock and Scarlet, but they're able to convince Roadblock and Scarlet that Miles is bad. Scarlet never really trusts him anyway, so, you know, she's ready to believe it. They find records to say that Miles is going to pull a heist on Fort Knox, to the idea of stealing the gold and destabilizing the US economy.
Classic.
So it's up to G.I. Joe and Mask to stop Miles. They eventually, you have the kind of the set piece at the end is the heist on Fort Knox, with Venom trying to raid the building. While Vanessa and Slyrax and Cliff are off stealing the gold, Miles is off stealing something else from a vault within the building. But anyway, they're defeated. Venom, again, they managed to...
I smell a twist.
Matt and G.I. Joe managed to, you know, chase him off or whatever. Vanessa's furious. She's like, you know, this is going to be their final big score, you know, all the gold bullion or whatever. But actually what Miles has stolen is a magical artifact that the US government's been keeping hidden in Fort Knox for years, called the Orb of Prismos.
Nice!
Which is the...
Visionaries!
Which is the key to bringing the visionaries in further along.
Brilliant. The Orb of Prismos. I love that. And that's the M. Night Shyamalan moment right at the end. Mm-hmm. And then you'll also have a little... As he reveals it and says what it is, there's a dun-dun-dun-dun music that's very much like the Visionaries, but like hidden within the orchestral movement.
The theater won't understand what the
yeah.
Only me... And the Mape singularity will notice.
we'll notice it. But that would be my idea. You have a Mask movie with G.I. Joe elements, and you set up Visionaries at the very end.
It's funny, as you were going through all that, I was visualizing all of that in my head. Like, I could see it, how it was working, everything. I think I would enjoy that. But yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Thanks, Paddy, for all of that.
So, Hasbro, if you're listening, I am available to turn this into a proper pitch, and I will give you my rate card.
Fantastic. That's Paddy at... Paddy at Leprechaun3, theleprechauning.com. Yes, awesome. Okay, well, that kind of brings us to the end of the news burst. Thanks, guys, for jumping on and chatting Mask for a short period of time. Well, an hour. Appreciated. I'll let you go now. That's it for this installment of the Full Force News Burst. Thank you to my awesome co-hosts, Paddy and Justin. See you next time, and as always, Full Force, working overtime, fighting crime. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter at The Full Force, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of these platforms with feedback, questions or to say, who do you think you are? A serious operation now? No, not even close. Look out for more of these news bursts that we are posting on the Facebook page from now on. Full Force.